Chapter 13. Springer. The next day, Carol had to go meet a media producer, talk through a biopic proposal. Warner S. Thompson hadn't even won a seat at the World Senate yet, and half the world was saying he was too much of a loose cannon to ever do so. But he made himself the subject of the dialogue. He set the agenda. He was the man people wanted to talk about. On that metric, he was already the winner. She went to the meeting with a weight in her mind. This was routine stuff. She should breeze through it and then be back with Thompson for his fundraiser dinner. 100 darlings of the collaring lobby, paying through the nose into his campaign chest, just so they could be in the same room as him. And he'd press the flesh and gift them with his smile and fill the room with his unbounded confidence. And then he'd end up in the hotel room staring at the wall, staring at the screen. Or he'd want to find a game, or have her find a girl, or have her. Or he'd do the other thing. He was in New York another 2 days, but Carol could feel the need building in him, and he was never a man to let needs go unanswered. The thought was a weight in her mind. The weight was an image of a bear. A gray, old, sagging bear, sitting down there against the stained concrete walls of the shambles. Honey wouldn't leave her alone. She'd thought she was meeting with a man called Brock Hustetter, but when she got to the Live with U.S. offices, a woman met her, bright and pert, dressed in something like a mirror to Carol's own skirt suit, red instead of blue, and tailored the opposite side. As though they were mirror universe versions of each other, or opposite numbers in some team computer game.
Jennifer Wiley, hi, how are you?
Where's Hustetter? Carol asked.
A moment of awkwardness. He's off the project. Sorry, did they not tell you? I'll do just as good a job, you can be sure. I'm just dying for the chance to work with Mr. Thompson. He's such an iconic figure of the modern age, you know?
They sat in the senior employee lounge, which Wiley greeted with such glee. Carol reckoned she wasn't allowed in there most of the time. They had it to themselves, and Carol made sure there wasn't any preemptive recording going on. Wiley didn't strike her as someone who'd pull that kind of trick, though. She was so enthusiastic. Carol was already listing her reservations. She'd go through with a meeting, get an idea of what the project was about, whether it would play nicely with the other fragments of image that Thompson's campaign was weaving around him to fill out the gaps in his personality. But she looked at Jennifer Wiley and reckoned that they'd go up a few rungs at Live with US and ask for someone else to helm the project. Get Hustetter back. Or else get some other elder statesman who could sit with Thompson over a drink and laugh and shake the man's hand, play a round of golf, exchange anecdotes, boys with boys. That was the sort of social scenario Thompson was safest in. Not this beaming young woman with her tight waist and two buttons of her blouse open, just like Carol herself, because that was the way Thompson liked it. Not her, because that was the way Thompson liked it. Just the same way he liked them young and enthusiastic, and so very keen to work with them. You don't want to work with him. The thought shocked her, was fought down immediately with stabs of guilt and reproach. Disloyal, how dare you? But she did not think Jennifer Wiley should be allowed to interview Thompson, to spend time with him, go back to the bar after. Go to his room. All things that might happen once Thompson took a shine to her. All things that would happen the moment he decided they should. Just the same way the world always bent about him like light around gravity. And yet Wiley was still chattering on, now introducing Carol to her assistant, now recounting some sparkling story about when she worked with some film star, some musician. Carol nodded. Laughed along. Even appreciated the glittery little facade the woman had made for herself that gave her enough hard and slanted edges
to burrow into the harsh competitive world that Brock Hustetter hadn't managed to navigate. For a moment, she wondered. Sudden replacements discovered on the day could mean all sorts of trouble. Thompson had enemies, after all. But they were also very much the order of the day, in an industry where the tides of favor went in and out, to the pull of far too many moons. And probably Wiley had already had to orbit a few of those moons more closely than she'd wanted to get where she was. Probably ending up underneath Thompson's rutting, grunting body wouldn't be overly novel for her. But Thompson wasn't like other people, not inside his head. It was Carol's job to make sure the world didn't see that, only saw the masks he put up to fool them. Better not let a bright young thing like Jennifer Wiley have a chance to see the real face. And besides. Carol stared into that earnest, animated face and thought about last night, when Thompson had been flush with glee at having Honey locked up in the shambles and nobody the wiser. He'd wanted an outlet for all that satisfaction. She'd been his outlet. She'd been there for him like a good PA. Knelt before him, then zipped him up after and wiped the smile back onto her face. And now she sat and laughed with Wiley, and in her head the words, "Get off me, get off me, get off," marched round and round the edge of the concrete pit. And down below, the bear stared mournfully up at her. The bear with a woman's voice, with the university education, the media career, and the long history of good causes. And right now, nobody knew where she was, except Thompson's people. And Carol was just waiting for Scout and some other discreet parties to confirm that nobody was sniffing about.
"We'll want some other perspectives, of course. Views on the great man from people who knew him on the way up,"
Wiley was saying happily, coming back to their little table with more coffee, with a tiny plate of tinier cookies that would lie untouched between them.
"Could always see he was touched with greatness. Some human interest piece from before anyone had heard of him. Just little touches to round him out in the minds of the viewer."
Carol nodded, because they'd been through this before for other interviews, for other studios. There weren't any such people. No elements of human interest. But that didn't mean you couldn't make them up from whole cloth. The trick was that you had to get Thompson interviewed first, let him engage in the sort of pile-driving conversation that passed for raconteurship with him. Let him tell with utter conviction anecdotes that were nothing but the shimmering web he wove around his past. A camouflage, refracting light from him until, to the casual observer, there was something there that looked not just human, but more human than human. A colossus, possessing all the virtues the viewer might want to see. Then Carol would bring in one of their regular actors, who'd take the non-committal details Thompson had given and perjure themselves, become witness to the invisible, mock up some foundations to the man's cloud castle.
"And there's you, of course," Wiley said.
Carol froze. There must have been a second in which Wiley saw it, the complete, terrified paralysis. It was covered a moment later, the regular smile being trotted out, the just one woman to another shake of the head, demurring little laugh to show how silly the idea was.
"Oh, no, nobody's interested in me. I'm just a PA." "But you must spend more time with Mr. Thompson than just about anybody,"
Wiley pointed out earnestly.
"You get to see how it all works. See the great man when he's vulnerable. Human. You go with him everywhere."
"Well, I really don't." Smile, little laugh, fighting back the spikes of panic. "I mean, I'm here and he's not, for example. I just make arrangements. Obviously, it keeps me busy, what with the trajectory of his career right about now, but it's nothing anyone would be interested in."
You sell yourself short, Carol.
Wiley leant forwards, touching Carol's hand with an odd shock of contact, suddenly intimate.
I know you've been working for the man during his frankly meteoric rise. Back when you first started, who'd have taken Warner S. Thompson in politics seriously? And now, he's the man everyone in the world's talking about, love him or hate him.
It's all his doing, Carol said firmly, almost desperately.
Thompson would not brook anyone taking credit for him.
And he was right to, she knew. He was his own architect.
Oh, other people actually made things happen.
Her, Florian, his succession of campaign managers briefly held to the light and then discarded. But they were all just organs of the central mass that was Thompson.
We think it would give a very relatable perspective,
Wiley chattered on, looking straight into her eyes now, almost hypnotic.
The woman who paves the way for greatness. We could do some sound bites with you, maybe a little reminiscence about when things weren't going so well, about how the team pulled together. I think a lot of our audience would really want to know what it's like to be so close to a man like Thompson. About the demands he makes of you, up all hours, day and night. He's such a powerful man. It must be hard to find time for yourself. It must be hard to say no.
Carol tried to say something, tried to keep that sunny smile on, tried to politely remove her hand from the light touch of the other woman's, but no words came out. There was a sound. Although it came from her throat, most of her couldn't imagine why or even how she had made that sound. It was like she'd heard a cat make once that was terrified of something. She almost felt her ears folding back, as though she was about to hiss at Jennifer Wiley in threat.
It is, isn't it?
And Wiley's cheery, all-girls-together manner was just gone. The all-girls-together that was left, given an entirely different character.
Hard to say no. I'm right, aren't I? Because he trusts you implicitly. Because you've been there for everything. For years.
Wiley's fingers like a nail, pinning her hand to the table. For all the pressure was the feathers.
And he wouldn't take no for an answer anyway, I imagine.
But with you, he wanted to be sure.
Was that what happened at Braintree?
I don't know what you're talking about. And right about now, Carol should be standing, making her apologies, just storming away. Blacklisting Wiley. The whole of Live with U.S. Never work in this town, this country, this world again. But the words had locked her in. And she was thinking about saying no. Saying no to Thompson. That terrifying, unthinkable thing. Of course she couldn't say no. And the daylight part of her mind was telling her that of course she'd never want to say no. Not with how devoted she was to the man. A slightly hysterical thread of internal monologue as brittle and cheery as Wiley's patter had been just moments before. And beneath that, some part of her bucked and fought and cried out, "Please no," and knew that no was the one thing Thompson never took as an answer.
"They never want us to have a choice,"
Wiley said quietly,
"because the thing they're most terrified of in all the world, is that we might say no. No, you're not so great. No, we don't want you to put that in us. Not now, not yours, not ever. No, we don't want to get through life in your pocket with no pockets of our own. And if you say no to a man like Thompson, if nobody ever said yes to him, what would be left?"
Carol had a moment in which her mind's eye cast up the image of that thing that was Thompson, the inner lurker that made its body out of the co-opted efforts of other people. Cast it up, naked and disconnected, a limbless thing of jelly like something pulled too soon from the womb. It's always a pleasure to work for Warner, her mouth said gaily. You feel like you're the tool of destiny, that you're doing God's work, almost. And that was the wrong line, because Live with the U.S.'s audience didn't poll as that religious, and she'd done her research before coming. It was from another interview, the one with the televangelist last month. Carol, Wiley said, still staring into her eyes, I suspect you are probably never a particularly good person, and you knew it. And that was part of the neuroarchitecture they gave you at Braintree. That you deserved what you got. That becoming the pawn of Thompson was what you deserved. All the usual tricks to stop you challenging the programming. And you know what? You don't have to be a good person. That's okay. But you're entitled to be your own person. And that's what they took away from you. Because they're sort of evil. Can't even trust bad people to do bad things for them. And I'm going to try to help you, Carol. Me and a friend of mine. I'm looking forward to working with you, if you choose to work with me. Carol, I'm going to give you a gift now. I want you to keep it with you. Use it when you need to. And Wiley had turned her hand over. Something cold and hard being pressed into Carol's palm, fingers folded over it. Carol blinked. Jennifer Wiley was still talking, still that big smile, sipping at her coffee now, leaning back, so very enthusiastic to work on the big project that was probably the biggest anyone had ever trusted her with. Carol wondered what price she'd paid, what wheels she'd greased to get it. And it wouldn't work. Carol would have to break the news gently, nothing personal, but exactly the wrong person to put within Thompson's pull. And she'd need to act fast because once Thompson saw Wiley, he'd set his sights on her. He'd add her to the list of things he wanted to do. And then it would be a done deal, and nothing Carol could do would stop it. And it would come down to the usual payoffs and NDAs and veiled threats to make sure that the used and discarded Wiley kept her pretty mouth shut. And Carol had done that too many times before. And that wasn't even counting the times when Boyo had got involved, or she'd had to pull the trigger on the trigger dogs. For those times when money or pressure or pieces of paper didn't look like they would ensure silence. No kiss-and-tell stories about Thompson. Not on her watch. And Wiley would be heartbroken, doubtless. Would be furious that her career was being derailed after all the things she'd surely had to do to get that far. And she'd never know that Carol had done it all to save her from something Carol couldn't save herself from. And soon enough, she was tripping out of the Live with U.S. offices, already composing her messages to make it all a reality. Pausing only a moment as she reached the car to think, was there a moment when? And she stopped, just for 2 seconds, as the car opened its door for her, looking down at the little enameled pin brooch she was holding. Gold and blue, oval like an ancient scarab, save for the suggestion of wings and the stripes on the abdomen, thinking, where did I get this exactly? But it was pretty enough, and something in her spiked with affection for it. That part of her that was usually so unhappy. The part that said, get off me, and that the rest of her was forbidden to listen to. But this one time she listened to it and slipped the brooch into her pocket and then mostly forgot about it. That night, Scout and the Trigger Dogs made their scheduled report to confirm that all was quiet at the Shambles. No visitors come for honey. Carol fielded half a dozen other select reports, some of which were in themselves summations of multiple other sources. Yes, people were looking for honey. She could trace the inquiries made by overt sources like the lawyer Aslan, or the World Senate Relief Force, or some of her academic colleagues. She could also sense the spidery touch of other operators. Hum OS was out there, in every shadow. And she would find Honey eventually. But that presupposed the old bear had that much time left. Nobody's attention was aimed at the shambles. Right now, Thompson had vanished away an entire bear. A well-known bear with a huge media footprint. And nobody had followed the sleight of hand. Carol was obviously delighted with this. She told herself how happy she was it had all worked out. That she wouldn't have to get Thompson to sign off on any of the alternative stories they had worked up, in case someone turned up at the shambles with a warrant and a demand. All perfectly plausible reasons why Honey might have been mistakenly arrested. But Thompson would have been angry at being thwarted, and she didn't want him angry. Of all the things in the world, she didn't want him angry. She didn't want him to make that second visit to the shambles either. In her mind, the old bear sat, like a Shakespearean king awaiting the murderers. Like a woman. Any woman who went against the tide and met the savage teeth of the world's fury at her presumption. Just a woman, even though she was a bear. And still, Carol would report to Thompson that it was all clear, that he could have what he wanted. It was her job. She loved her job. She loved Thompson, would do anything, unquestioningly loyal. Boyle met her at the foyer of tonight's hotel. Something in her gave him pause, his brown eyes brimming with empathy. They just stood there for long seconds, looking at each other. In Carol's mind, she was a fragile thing, suspended between the pulls of heavy objects. Thompson, up in the penthouse suite above. Honey, down in the pit below. And she wanted to talk to Boyo, to tell him how she felt. She wanted to tell him that she'd met with a media executive today, and it had been a perfectly normal, pleasant chat, except that something deep inside her spiked anxiety every time she thought about the Live with US documentary. She wanted to tell him that. She wanted to tell Thompson something, anything, that would stop tonight going ahead. But there wasn't anything she could say. She wanted to tell him that she wanted to say no, but they'd made her sign a waiver and given her headwear, and now she couldn't ever say no. Not to anything. And that meant she couldn't tell Boyo. And even if she could, he had headwear too, and couldn't say if it was just the same for him. Up on the top floor, Thompson already seemed to know how smoothly it had all gone. When she arrived, it was obvious one of the campaign team had been and gone in her absence and brought him something. Thompson had a gun. It was a wide-barreled rifle, the sort of thing she imagined might have been used for elephants, while there were still elephants, for rhinos back when they hadn't gone the way of the unicorn, or perhaps for the bison the Russians were still desperately trying to preserve in the narrowing strip of tundra over in Siberia. Loaded for bear. That was the phrase, wasn't it?
I want a picture,
Thompson told her. And she knew exactly what he was thinking of. All those game hunters standing triumphantly over the bodies of animals that only existed in pictures like those, in old TV documentaries or children's books. Lions and tigers and bears. Except the bears had proved adaptable enough to cling on, and then useful enough to become part of the Bioform program. A picture would be damaging, sir, she told him, if it got out. Thompson beamed. He never just smiled, not really. A smile was a wan and fickle thing, compared to the expression he could muster. It filled the room with his mood and left no room for anyone else's.
You record it, he told her, just for us. Go get the car, Boyo.
And helplessly within Carol's head, the thought, we're going on a bear hunt.